Hey there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing.
But, you know, just like gardening anywhere, it's a constant experiment, and you learn and you try to take some notes and then be able to find your notes the next year so you can, you know, not make the same mistake a second time, which I'm not very good at doing. Is like always, I'm always, you know, trying to say, all right, yeah, by Valentine's Day, I need to plant my tomatoes. And usually it's about the second or third of March that I'm planting them. And then they're always, you know, a couple weeks from being ready before it gets too hot in the summertime. So it's...
That's from my interview number 162 with Denny Cray, which is a great listen. He talks all about vermiculture. Hey, everyone. So I just want to remind you that this is the most important time to be taking good notes on what's working well, what's not working well, what don't you want to forget come next February and March when it's time to order supplies or do your design. You know, what are your favorite seeds or what do you want to plant more of? Do you want more broccoli? Like, you might think I am never going to forget this, but you probably are going to forget it. And a great way to support the Green Organic Gardener podcast would be to get our garden journal. That's got a beautiful butterfly that I took a picture of on our lilac. So it's like a little part of our home and your home. It's got blank pages and line pages, and it would really support us a lot. But most of all, we want you to have good records. Hey everyone, have I told you about the Forager Project? They're a 100% organic plant-based food company based in California, dedicated to making a world a better place than they found it. Don't you love that? They make yogurts, kefirs, all these cool things out of organic cashews. Do you know that cashews are actually a seed on an apple? Yeah, I found the coolest video on cashews. Anyway, so they turn these cashews into sour cream, cottage cheese, milk, yogurts. They're really delicious. They sent me samples, actually, in a FedEx box with ice. It was so cool. They're absolutely delicious. Forager Project is passionate about creating healthy, organic, plant-based food and equally passionate about nurturing a healthy democracy. They believe that voting is the most essential ingredient needed to do this. Forager wants to inspire everyone to get out and vote, and that means you participate in our democracy. They provide voting resources and information for you at foragerproject.com/vote or on the socials like Instagram, Twitter, etc. at Forager Project. Cultivate democracy. Vote. Welcome to the Green Organic Garden. It is Friday, August 7th, 2020, and I have two guests back on the line who are just going to drop golden seed after golden seed. They've got their own podcast and radio show, and you are just going to love them. And welcome back from the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, Joey and Holly Beard.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you guys for taking time out of your busy day. We were just talking in the pre-chat about how much you guys have going on and how many radio stations across the country you're on and just all this cool stuff. So go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourselves.
So we are a couple in Wisconsin.
Married.
Married. We're married. And we started with producing how-to gardening videos on YouTube, and now we have over 1,700.
Yeah.
Which you can find on our YouTube channel at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener or our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. And a few years ago, we decided we were going to reach out to radio and get a radio show. We did have solely just a podcast before that. Then we were like, we're going to do radio. Our first year, which would have been for the 2016 season. 2017.
Season one was 2017 here.
Right. But before that, we had started reaching out for sponsors, and we just belly flopped.
We didn't know what we were doing.
We didn't know what we were doing.
And we still don't, but it seems to be working. Yeah.
We do know what we're doing, mostly. But, so then we were like, we reached out to some other great garden radio show hosts, and we're like, what are we doing wrong? How do we obtain sponsors? How do we do this better or more efficiently? I think we're better, more efficient at this point.
Now they didn't get the sponsors for us.
No. But they gave us some guidance. They were like, you're doing this really well. You're not doing this. You should try this, blah, blah, blah. So we did that. And then in 2017 was the first year of our radio show. We were only on one station, and then we grew since then. And now we're on
16 stations across the country,
across the United States. Yeah.
In 2020 from Boston all the way to Southern California. And, we do this all ourselves. And Holly works, well, we all work in the house now based on the conditions. but she has a full-time job, and then I do this full-time. And then in the evening, we get together and look at things that we need to do together or the projects that would be best if we did together. And so we had we have an understanding of what's going on. And then we have the radio show each week, March through October. And I was asked, well, why only March through October? Well, number one, we need a break. Number two, when you get to, and we've talked to the garden host that have the shows year round, as well as the environmental talk show host, in November, December, January, you might as well not even look at ratings. Nobody's listening. Very few people are listening. It's just not something that people do. So that's why we've taken that 17 weeks off to regroup, reestablish our brand, and go get ready to go for the next season.
Oh, that's so interesting. I feel like it's the opposite. Like, gardeners are so busy during the garden season that they listen more in the winter. They definitely have time to do more interviews. But what I want to know is, when do you guys have time to garden when you're doing all this? How do you keep your garden going?
So we do that on Saturday mornings-ish to the afternoon. And then Joey goes, just depending on...
I'll explain why I'm going to a garden here.
So where we live, we rent, and we do have a small front yard garden. But our large garden is at my mom's house in her yard. And she has nothing to do with this. She lets us just run wild.
Well, she doesn't want to cut grass.
That's right, so she doesn't want to cut grass. So she's like, I have this huge yard. Tear it up. So that's...
We did.
So that's where our garden is. It's about 20 minutes away. So Joey and I prepare, plant, what have you. And then he will go sometimes once or twice a week during the week to harvest or check on things, whatever. And so that's when we find our time.
And then on Saturday mornings, while we're harvesting, planting, preparing, whatever, I've already got a video log figured out of what we're going to film for the next week. Or right, sometimes because we put out videos, 7 to 12 videos a week based on the time of year, what we're going to be discussing in the short videos or the longer videos. So I've already got that planned out and scripted. Well, not scripted, but planned out on how we're going to film that. So as we're doing the project, we can film as well and get both things done at the same time. And then I'll edit it throughout the week and get it programmed whenever it's supposed to come out on social media.
Man, you guys are all about systems. Way to go.
That's Joey. I'm chaos, but Joey keeps us organized, which is good.
So what is growing right now in your garden at your mom's house?
We've got tomatoes that are doing really well. Peppers are doing very well. Bush beans and pole beans, where you can't keep up with them, which is a good problem. What we have found, we transitioned from traditional ground garden to majority raised beds this spring. We've got some documentation on that on our website on how we went to do such. And then we brought in compost. But what the odd thing was, in certain beds, the tomatoes have done good, the peppers have done good, the green beans have done phenomenal. But the same soil in the same bed, beets didn't do very good, peas did relatively okay, and the kale is only a quarter of the size of what the kale is that's in the traditional ground on the other end of the garden. So we're still trying to figure out why that one bed that the beets and the lettuce and the peas and the kale is not produced what we thought should have produced compared to the other beds. So it's always, sometimes it's a mystery, and you got to do a little deciphering and detective work to figure out why one bed of the same soil did not grow things as well as the next bed with the same soil. So, and then we've got cucumbers growing. We're going to be, with the transition from traditional ground garden to raised bed garden, we are able to focus on a more thorough fall garden because we're not fighting the weeds. We've got an irrigation system in now, so the soil is not concrete at this time of year. And so we can kind of focus more on turnips and rutabagas and lettuce and radishes that we never really focused on in the fall because at this time the weeds were overtaking, the ground was too dry, and we, to be honest, kind of gave up on it, was just going to take whatever the garden gave us at that point and be done with it. So that's where we're at. We had a potato harvest a couple of weeks ago. Not as good as what we thought it should be.
Yeah, we're not really sure what happened. We had the raised beds. We figured the soil was nice and loose.
Couldn't go wrong.
The stalks that came up looked good. We had plenty of flowers on them. It seemed like, okay, we're going to dig up the soil and have a treasure of potatoes. And it was like, womp womp. Did not happen. We just had a few potatoes. And we're not sure what happened. We found some grubs, but we don't know if that has anything to do with it. So we're definitely going to have to do some research and see or determine if we want to grow potatoes next year. The last couple of years for us in potatoes have not been good. So
yeah, 2 years ago.
So where did you get the dirt or the compost from? Fresh dirt that you put in your beds this year?
Correct. We got it from our local independent garden center. They have a supplier, a well-known national brand, and they've always had phenomenal reviews on it. So we went ahead and purchased that. And for the most part, 90% of the places that we've put it and grown in it, it's perfect. It was exactly what we anticipated. It was just those few areas with those few crops that didn't produce the way we thought they should. So, I mean, you're never going to have 100% crop. You're always going to have some failure or partial failure of crop. So it's not a disappointment. It's just, let's try to figure out what went wrong so if we can fix it for next year type of thing.
So it could be like seeds. Could be time you put it in the ground, yeah. Right?
Could be a variety of different things.
We certainly have struggled with germination rates this year with things and things taking a lot longer to take off or not taking off at all than we thought they would. And I wish I had better records of which seeds were doing what. But that's interesting that you have so much. But beets, peas, kale. Did I lose you guys?
No. At least it wasn't like a tomato failure or a pepper failure or a green bean failure. Those are kind of our staples that we look forward to and work very diligently in making sure we have the best crop possible. Kale, okay, we can get that at the farmer's market. Beets, we can pick them up at the farmer's market. It's not a detriment, but if it was a larger, more prominent crop that we look forward to, we would be much more upset than what we are.
Isn't that interesting? Because like last year I didn't get any kale, and kale was like one of my key crops this year. And where I put the seeds in, I have like one, like there's three short rows and two of the rows are fine. And then for some reason, the middle row, only half of it germinated. And it seemed to take for so long. And I kept saying, I'm so glad Mike planted kale down in his mini farm, because my kale was a disaster. And now my kale is doing really good and his kale in the mini farm isn't doing anything, but they did take a lot longer to take off. But like, I never really liked kale until 2 years ago. I planted that dinosaur Jacinto kale. Mm-hmm. I am so in love with that, and I never want to have another season without it.
Yeah. I don't know what the season we had a cold spring. Then it got wet. Then it got hot, and it's just been it's been warm. I don't know what the deal is. And that's what happens as a gardener, is you know,
yeah,
your chance, you hope for the best and you learn from your mistakes. And sometimes you just have to work with what nature gives you.
Now, do you guys,
the advantage of being a gardener is that we do have resources that we can go to the farmer's market or go to the grocery store. It's not like we're on a mega giant farm where if we have a major crop failure, we've lost thousands and tens of thousands of dollars and have to get the insurance company involved and try to recoup what we've lost. So for the big people,
right,
it's very different between us and the big people. We can afford a mistake or a crop failure and it doesn't hurt us.
Yeah. I was just like, last winter was really hard for me not to have any kale or spinach or Swiss chard in my freezer, because I realized how much of that I eat during the year. And I don't have a farmer's market locally to go to in the winter, or I can hardly afford the, like, I just look at, like, I'm like, I cannot bring myself to pay $3 for that bunch of kale. Like, I don't know. It just is hard for me. But what I'm curious about, like, I feel like everybody keeps talking about these nematodes that people are buying and putting in their dirt. Like, have you guys tried any of that, or have you done anything like that?
No, we have not. I mean, nematodes, there are good nematodes, obviously. I'm assuming that's what people are buying.
No, they're buying the bad nematodes because they want, yeah.
I just feel weird about it. Like
a pound of bad nematodes.
I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah.
I don't know. Like I grew up composting, and I've done a lot of research about composting and how you have to just allow nature to do its thing, and you have to allow nature to bring the worms in. You bring your worms in naturally. You add compost to your soil. You add organic matter, and then the worms come in and build their home there. And I know that nematodes are not worms, but I just think, like, do you really want to bring these creatures into your garden? And you don't necessarily, I mean, I guess you could try to find a reliable source, but to me, it's like, Joey and I try to live in harmony with our little ecosystem. And I don't know if I just feel like there's so many other variables.
It'd be like bringing worms in from the bait shop.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, it doesn't sit right with me. And I've heard of people adding them, and nematodes are good. You know, they do help the decomposition. They do feed the roots of the plants, but I don't know if it's something that I would personally feel comfortable doing.
I totally get that, because everybody's talking about it. And these are soil experts, and I'm like, I know I should listen, but yet I've gone to Amazon to push buy and I haven't clicked. And that's exactly why I'm so glad you voiced that.
Oh, heck no.
So,
Amazon, that's for sure. Like I would buy them from a nematode farm, if that's a thing or whatever. Like,
well, like whenever like you, like source. If we ever buy, when we buy a kombucha SCOBY, we buy it from the source. We just don't buy it randomly from XYZ, you know, company that has a bunch of other stuff on their website.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I found some brand that seemed pretty reliable. We'll see what happens. Cause somebody sent me a picture of, like, they're like, I bought this because you posted the Amazon link in the show notes. And I asked the guest who had recommended them. I'm like, are these good? And she said, yeah. So we'll see maybe. What happens. I actually, one of my biggest trigger, it was just the cost. Like, it was like $20 that I didn't have that day, but yeah, I don't know. I keep hearing about them, but I've always felt like you too. And my husband's like that too. He's like, we're building compost, but we just never have enough compost for the size of farm that we have. And then this year I put most of the last batch of compost we had on a crop of buckwheat that I was trying to grow where I want to put flowers next year, but it was like covered in grass. So I put like the cardboard down and then I put all the compost on it and put the buckwheat, and it's growing like crazy. But my husband's like, that buckwheat was supposed to go on these carrots and these beets here. And that's part of why I think he's struggling this year. So I don't know. It's all lessons. It's a miracle the man's still married to me.
Well, and you're also in an area where you're the convenience factor of running down to pick a truck load up of compost from the garden center is much more of a challenge than what it is for us or other people who garden because of the area that you're living in.
Yeah. We actually drove like 100 miles to get, we did buy two big giant, those like huge weight things of soil. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't enough. It's never enough. I always tell people, I'm like, start building compost. You're throwing gold in the garbage. What are you doing? Like, I can't understand people don't compost because we so desperately need it at my house. And it just makes me cringe. Anyway, tell us about something that didn't work the way. Oh, well, we kind of talked about that. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links.
You can find Deer Fence Supplies on deerbusters.com. We're located in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. We ship nationwide for free. And if you want 10% off, type in the word fences, F-E-N-C-E-S, at checkout on deerbusters.com and save yourself some money while you're getting deer fence.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Forager Project, family-owned, 100% organic, plant-based food company based in California dedicated to making the world a better place than they found it. Forager crafts dairy-free yogurts, kefirs, milks, and sour cream using their hero ingredient, organic cashews, for the creamiest base for all of its products. Forager Project is passionate about creating healthy, organic, plant-based food, and they are equally passionate about nurturing a healthy democracy. They believe that voting is the most essential ingredient needed to do this. Forager wants to inspire everyone to get out and vote and participate in our democracy. They've provided voting resources and information for you at foragerproject.com/vote and on social at Forager Project. Cultivate democracy. Vote.
And now let's get to the root of things.
Well, do you guys have a least favorite activity to do in the garden or something you got to force yourselves to get out there and do?
Weeding. Weeding. We despise weeding.
Well, and that's why we went to the raised beds.
Let's hear that story.
Yeah.
So we have about 1,800 square feet in the garden at my mom, and about 1,800 square feet of it was weeds by August. So what would happen is that at the beginning of
on a normal year.
Yeah.
Beautiful crop,
bumper crop of weeds. So Joey would go in the spring and he would go and turn the soil over, pull the weeds out, diligently pull the roots of the weeds out to help reduce this weed problem. He would turn the soil over with a garden fork, blisters on his hands. We would do what we wanted, what we needed to do to help prevent the weeds. And then last year was like, we had it. We just lost our minds.
More thorough and diligent in which I would weed with the garden fork and removing the roots midway through the season, the more intense the weeds got. Do not understand why. I do know that weed seeds do sit dormant in the soil, and some can sit there for up to 80 years. But the more diligent, I would put 18, 20 hours a weekend leading up to, as well as trying to balance everything else out, weeding for 3 or 4 or 5 hours a day, trying to work these 3 by 10 beds, 3 foot wide by 10 foot long, or 4 foot wide by 10 foot long beds. And I would go down 8-10 inches and work, and it just never did benefit us. And then at the end or midway through last year, we decided, okay, clearly what we're doing is not working as well as we want. We're not going to use glyphosate and spray the garden to kill the weeds. So we need to figure out something else. So we looked at our options and raised beds. We did the financial, number crunching stuff, and it was going to work for us. So we invested in the lumber, and we did use treated lumber. People are very both sides of the fence on that. However, treated lumber is treated with a copper now instead of an arsenic as it was in the late 90s. And the different studies that we have shown indicated that you're going to consume the same amount of copper by drinking water out of copper water pipes as you will that would leach from the board into the soil and into your plant. Nevertheless, we bought the treated lumber, and we did 5 beds, 2 4-foot wide by 16-foot long beds, and 3 4-foot wide by 12-foot long beds, figuring out somewhere around almost 400 square feet, something like that. And then we had large grow bags and other elevated raised beds in which we had constructed in past years that we reconfigured in the on top of the old traditional ground garden. And then we figured out the soil we wanted. It was delivered. And it cost money up front, but with anything in life, it's an investment. It's not just a one and done, throw it away. This will be utilized for many years to come, and there will be years in which we will need to top off the beds, invest in a couple of more yards of compost, and fill the beds that way in order to revitalize some of the soil, in addition to using the compost that we're making ourselves.
So, but how did you figure that this was going to save you the weed problem?
We looked at it as we did a lot of video studying, a lot of reading, and by the weeds in which we had, if we could smother them with the compost and cardboard in that instance, it would reduce not having to till, not having to fork the soil or weed the soil at all. So I think we've spent, four hours all together building the beds and then putting the soil in the beds, and that was it. Now we just...
It was probably more like six.
Six
I
hours.
Think. Yeah.
And now all we do is the occasional walk through and pull some weeds that have come up through the bed or been dispersed by air or birds, and that's all the weeding that we've done. Anything else, we just mow around the elevated raised beds and the grow bags, and it's made things a whole lot better. Yes, it's reduced the size of the garden tremendously, but also with the size of the 1,800 square foot garden and the 1,800 square foot of bumper crop weeds, we were not enjoying gardening at all. It was more of a task, more of a job, more of a, okay, we've got to go do this. This is not fun. So we had to change it up because it wasn't fun, and if it wasn't fun, we wasn't going to do it anymore.
Man, I knew you guys were just going to drop golden seed after golden seed. So, on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
My favorite activity would be harvesting beans. That's fun. Tomatoes, everybody says, oh, I like harvesting tomatoes, so I'll leave that for somebody else. But beans, I like doing that.
Yeah, you like harvesting beans. I like harvesting root crops, like pulling the root crops out. And I think that's always interesting to see what's underneath the soil. I like planting beans. So I guess.
Well, yeah, you did a good job this year. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you like about harvesting beans? Like, that is like one of my least favorite jobs.
What it you can pack a lot of beans in a very small area. You can get 9 bush bean plants in 1 square foot, and that produces when they start putting beans on, that produces a lot of beans in a very small area. So I like to harvest them and then see the quantity that I'm getting out of a very small area. Pole beans, you can do 8 per square feet. So you can get a lot of beans, and that's what to plant a lot in a small area, and they produce heavy, and we can have something that we can put up for winter. Beans, yeah, you could go buy at the grocery store, at the farmer's market, but if you can grow 12, 15, 20 pounds, if not more, of beans in a small area, you've saved yourself a lot of money, and you know how they are grown and how they were preserved.
Yeah, well, one of the staples at our house is homemade vegetable soup that has homegrown potatoes, homegrown carrots, and homegrown green beans. And Mike, but I just like, maybe it's because his are down in the mini farm and there's just rows. So he cans at least 52 to 100 cans of green beans a year. So we have them for that soup. And just to me, I am always looking at him like, that's backbreaking labor. But I don't know. I'm not sure his, like, they're in as small of a, maybe he could crowd them together more than you are. But yeah, he loves it. I mean, it's true. You do go down there. And I just hate that they're in the ground and the bending over part.
Yeah, if you have mobility issues, the investment of a higher raised bed to where it's at waist high makes the harvesting a lot easier. But also there's a bigger investment in that. And we don't can our green beans. We've chosen to freeze our green beans because we just don't find, one, you have to pressure can them. And two, we find it just doesn't have the crispness that we like.
We like the crispness when we pressure can them, which is fine. And not everybody has room in their freezer, but we like to just blanch ours briefly for a couple minutes and then just freeze them. And that's how we prefer to do it. Just like Joy had mentioned, because then we let them thaw when we're going to cook them. We let them thaw and then we saute them or we put them in a soup or whatever. But for us, it's just what we prefer.
Yeah, well, we've been looking for a chest freezer for a long time. And also, so I've been like following like in our Organic Oasis guidebook that I wrote, like I'm really big on like, if you're starting a garden, start in your fridge and your like, and look at your food, what do you buy? And like, we buy a ton of frozen peas. So Mike grew a ton of like the shelling peas and he froze those the other day. And he said to me, maybe we should freeze the green beans. Like he must have seen something online. And I was like, well, yeah, frozen green beans are going to taste better and they're going to hold their thing better. But I can't remember. He's like a natural canner. Like when he's doing it to me, I'm like, you're the mad scientist and keep that thing away from me. And I hope it doesn't explode in my face. But of course I'm afraid of his chainsaw too. So I'm I'm a nervous Nelly.
You bring up a good point. Look in your freezer, look in your pantry, because we've talk to gardeners and like, well, I have a problem growing okra and Holly or my first questions are, do you like okra? Well, not really, but how do you grow it? So, and then why do you grow it if you don't like it? Now, some people will say, oh, because I see it on TV or whatever the case is. Other people, they have more of a connection with, my grandmother grew it. I don't really like it, but I grew it in memory of her type of thing. I understand that. But if you just don't like
exactly.
it and you're growing it, why are you wasting that space? We can't grow broccoli and cauliflower for nothing. So we've grown tomatoes in that space, so we just buy the broccoli and cauliflower at the grocery store, the farmer's market, and move on with our lives, you know.
Yeah, another thing I've been talking about a lot on my show is like, right now is the time to be recording what you're wishing you were growing more yeah. of, and what's not working right. What do you wish you did differently? Because you are going to forget. I guarantee you next March, you're going to think, I'm never going to forget this. I carried this hose down here 20 times. I don't want to plant in this bed where the hose is, like, you're going to forget. It's all going to be like, oh, these beets taste so good. I'm so glad I grew those beets. And none of the troubles are all going to melt away. And so it's important you record that. And like, I'm surprised at how much I'm learning about, like, looking at my, what we eat things. Like, I thought I had a pretty good tap on that, but I really didn't. So all sorts of lessons you're always learning.
And we carry a piece of technology in our pocket all the time. Just take pictures. And then you can go back and look at yeah. what date you took the picture on, but take pictures. And I always take, you know, 10 times more pictures than what I think I'm going to need. One, so I can review, and two, so I can always have something for, you know, whatever project I'm trying to do. I always have imagery for that particular topic and show. But you just do short videos and do self documentations on your phone, 10, 15 seconds. Hey, I put beans in bed 3 in 2020. They didn't do any good. I'm not going to do that again. Note it and then save it in your phone and be sure you review it next year.
Oh, there's so much to keeping good records. Like, where are you going to rotate? Or like I told Mike, so I planted my very first fall crop of broccoli seedings, like my very first broccoli seeds that are growing into plants. I'm so excited. This is like a new thing for me. And I'm just about to put them in. And my plan was I was going to put them in the bed where I put the buckwheat. And buckwheat is supposed to be a 30-day crop from seed to flower. And so I was looking the other day, I'm like, when did I plant those? It's got to have been 30 days. And so I was so glad I took a picture of the day I planted the seeds, because now I can see it's not a 30-day crop in Montana. It's more like a 60-day crop. And so now I have to figure out, where am I going to put those broccolis? Anyway, what's the best gardening advice you guys have ever received?
that's a good question. What do you think, Joey?
Well, you always look at your garden. Do not assume that everything's okay from a distance. We talked to a gardener in Southern California many, many years ago on a podcast, and we asked him that question. His response was, get in your garden, lay down, and look up. You're going to see much more good and bad things when you're at ground level, at plant level. A lot of bugs like to hide underneath leaves. You're going to see damage underneath the leaves. You're going to see flowers. So get down to the plant's level and then look at them, versus just standing in the yard going, oh, everything looks good. They look green. I'm going to go back in the house.
Another one I would have to say is mulch. We didn't mulch for I don't know, probably a couple of years.
Right.
And then we started to mulch, and that makes a huge difference. It suppresses weeds. It holds in moisture. It shades the roots. It's a very good thing.
What do you guys use for mulch?
We use anything from straw to, we collect our leaves in the fall. We hold on to those. We take grass clippings, but we make sure that they are dry and they are seed free. And they haven't been, you don't want to use grass clippings that have been sprayed with any sort of chemicals. So we use that. So it's mostly straw, leaves, and then also the grass clippings.
I used grass clippings for the first time this year. It worked a lot better than I thought it would be. I didn't let them dry either. And Patty Armister came to my house the next day, just right after I put them down. She's like, wow, I can't believe you just put that right on there all green. She was like, she's like picking it up and she's like, I want to see if it's all mushy underneath, but it's so dry here where we are. They were brown within 24 hours. It didn't matter. And so they're working good. It was so easy. Like, the other thing Patty was disgusted with was how much lawn. Like, I think she's still lying awake at night going, how can Mike and Jackie have that much lawn? But we live in the woods. She lives out on the east side where it's plains. We have to worry about forest fires. So we have, like, our lawn is like fire break in a lot of places. We definitely can add some more. I mean, there is a lot of lawn, but so I have all this lawn. So I was like, I asked Mike one day, I'm like, can I just put the grass clippings down on? And he's like, sure, try it. And I was worried that they would like grow, but they didn't. It worked great. So use what you got.
On the grass,
that was awesome advice, you guys.
On the grass clippings, you want to make sure you don't have any seed pods on those grass when you cut it. You just don't want to go in the ditch and knock a bunch of stuff down and bring in the garden.
No.
Because those seeds will disperse, and you got enough problems with weeds. You don't need to bring more in.
Yeah. No, this was just, we had a lot of rain all the way through like the middle of July, and then it finally quit, and then it's been hot ever since, but up until then. So I was like making, we still have two wheelbarrows full outside that are full of grass clippings just drying out that I can't even add to the compost because the compost is so full of grounds. And then we have not cut the grass in two weeks now, or that was probably the last time I cut the grass, like the middle of July, because it's just, it's turning brown and crackly, and the taller you leave it, the greener it will stay, the longer. Anyway, do you guys have a favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you guys not live without?
I would have to say it's our flat tine garden fork. We use that for a lot of stuff, whether it be just like picking through the soil, harvesting root crops. We used it for moving stuff. So either that or just a good garden spade or shovel. I think we would have to pick those two.
Yeah, garden tools. spade and a garden fork.
We'd have to ask for it.
One tool per person.
Yeah, there we go. One tool per person.
So, Joey, are you taking the spade and Holly's taking the garden fork?
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll take the spade. Yeah.
I agree. The garden fork has been like somehow I found one on sale for $99, and I can't even believe I hesitated for 24 hours. Cause if I was going to produce anything, I would produce these broad fork, garden forks, whatever, because that is the best thing ever. I love that thing, which I never even heard of till I started my podcast and one of my guests recommended it.
Well, Aaron and Alethea. We use the hay fork to dig potatoes because we didn't, just what we had available. And that doesn't work so well because those tines are very, not very strong. So you definitely want to invest in a good tine garden fork, flat tine garden fork. And once you start using it and you feel resistance, don't keep bending it because you'll bust a tine off and then you have to buy a new one like we did.
No way, man, you must be strong.
But the first one we bought at a yard sale for $5. And it was already pretty old at that point, too. And we just had to replace ours this year.
We didn't replace it. We're just using that one for the traditional ground dig and the nice one for the raised beds.
That's, I mean, added to the family, whatever.
Now that we have two forks designated for two different type of harvesting procedures, I guess we've moved up in the world.
I think so.
Yeah, I can totally relate. I want one for the mini farm and one for the garden beds up by the house. I totally agree. I like two of everything. I'm like, I want two wheelbarrows and I want two compost piles and two pitchforks and two of, and I think Mike bought us each a shovel, a long-handled shovel this year. So now we have like four. because we're constantly just like, he'll get down to the mini farm and be like, oh, I left that up at the house. And his mini farm, it's not very far, but he certainly gets the miles in going back and forth. Anyway, what's your guys' favorite recipe you like to cook or eat from the garden?
I think mine is probably, I make this like tomato-y gravy pasta.
Is that with the cheese and the noodles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I take butter, and then I take cherry tomatoes, and I cut the cherry tomatoes in half. I can't tell you how much cherry tomatoes, just a bunch.
That's okay.
Probably one and a half to two cups, I would conservatively.
Say probably like, I don't know, like about a quart-sized jar of tomatoes. That sounds good.
Okay.
And then I saute those down. I add garlic. You can add Italian seasoning, whatever you have that makes it like Italian deliciousness. And then cook that down. And then I usually add shrimp. But if you don't eat shrimp, you can add whatever protein you would like. You don't have to add protein, but I like the protein. And then cook that together. And the butter kind of reduces, it kind of flavors the tomatoes, and it gives it like a nice texture. And then we put that over the pasta, whatever kind of pasta you want. We're not fancy here. And then we put Parmesan, fresh Parmesan cheese over the top of that. And it's just really good.
That's one of my favorite meals. That sounds so good. How about you, Joey?
I keep it simple. I always grew up with, well, there's two different things. Just slicing tomatoes across and about a half inch thick and with salt and pepper. That was a dish growing up. And then also taking zucchini and cutting them about quarter inch slivers, circles, and then pan frying them. You roll them in egg and then you roll them in cornmeal and then you pan fry them in grease and you brown them on both sides and you eat them that way. Now, Holly doesn't like that at all for probably a variety of reasons, but you had it, but you didn't care much for it.
I don't. When was the last time you made that for me?
It's been a couple of years, but I don't make it for you because you don't like it.
Well, maybe you should make it again.
Okay, we can do that.
We'll give it a whirl.
All right.
I like zucchinis when they're small like that, like the size of a quarter. I always say I put zucchinis on everything. That sounds good though. Egg and cornmeal. I haven't tried that.
Well, also the other thing is mock zucchini when we can, when we have an abundance of zucchini. Holly, you can explain what mock zucchini is.
Yeah, zucchini is like
it's the mushroom.
It's or the tofu maybe. Yeah. The gardening world. I don't know.
Absorbs flavor.
It absorbs flavor. So we've made mock pineapple, canned pineapple with zucchini. So basically it's like, it tastes like pineapple. It kind of looks like pineapple, but it's zucchini and you can it. And you just basically are using pineapple juice and some sugar to flavor that zucchini. You let it soak and it soaks in all the flavors. Relish is another one. So it tastes just like regular relish, but it's zucchini relish. And then we haven't tried this yet, but we're at some farm stand, like I don't know how many years ago, and this lady told us about this mock apple pie. And instead of using apples, they use zucchini.
Oh, I have had that.
Yeah, and it was just like an apple pie. So zucchini is multi-versatile.
I was going to tell you in my in the Organic Oasis guidebook that Mike and I wrote, in the back chapter, there's recipes. And I have a recipe exactly like your tomato gravy pasta, except for I use zucchini noodles, but it has the shrimp and everything. It's that might be something you might want to try sometime. Yeah. I was surprised because I thought the zucchini noodles would get all mushy and soggy, and they didn't. They held up awesome. How about a favorite internet resource? Where do you guys like to surf on the web?
Well, whenever we have a question that comes in, or we have a question ourselves that we do not know the answer, we always first go to a university extension website. Those locations are the best source for adequate and correct information. Also, we can go to, there's a couple of very popular garden myths websites that actually have done the studies and the science to show that this is true or this is not true. Those are two, or a farmer's almanac. Those seem to be three really good resources that if we can't find it there, then we've got to do some hard digging because there may be not an answer to that question if those three sources do not provide it.
The farmer's almanac website is pretty good, especially if you can get past all of the ads. That's a little frustrating sometimes. It takes a while.
I hate ads.
I know. And I'm like, I just want information. I'm waiting for the stupid ad to load. And then there's like a video that pops up and you're like, no. So.
Oh, and it's just getting worse and worse all the time, isn't it? Like YouTube now, you can't even watch a video. And forget it if you click the wrong video by accident and then you sit there and watch the 30-second ad and then have to change videos.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Sorry. Farmer's Almanac.
It's okay. Yeah, that's a good website if you can get, you know, questions for it. And then for canning or any sort of food preserving is the National Center for Home Food Preservation. I have been giving this link out, this website out to so many people this year because so many people are like, hey, I'm gardening now. Now I want to can. I want to preserve this and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's very helpful. It's safe. Like it tells you how to do stuff safely. It gives guides. Like I have X amount of tomatoes and I want to make this. Or I want to can these. How many jars do I need? And like, it just, it has all of that information. Like, I live in the mountains and I'm at this
elevation.
Yeah. So I need this. Like, well, we obviously don't live in the mountains,
but
so it's like, it's just beautiful. So there's that. And then if you want to get like fancier for your canning recipes, you know, the ball canning website, which is, I think it's freshpreserving.com. And even Better Homes and Gardens is a trusted resource, but that's the biggest thing is like, I've had people message me and they're like, I have this pickle brine that my friend uses and is it safe? And I'm just like, I don't know, but you need to do this. Like I'm not going to assess your brine. However,
well, people get angry at Holly when back when we used to do garden talks, back whenever that was.
Oh my gosh.
And online, whenever they said, well, here's how I can. Is this okay? And Holly would say, no, this is, but I'm doing it this way. Isn't it okay? And Holly would never, will not give them the gratification that, yeah, whatever you're doing is fine. Just keep doing it, because she goes by canning as a science. And if you don't do it right, you can be sick or you can die from it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Huh, that's crazy. Well, good for you for sharing those resources, for sure. Yeah, and Mike has one book, and he always pulls it out and follows that recipe exactly. Yeah, it's really important to keep it safe. But that being said, if you do it safely, it is a great way to preserve your, you know, stuff from your garden, especially if you're like us and don't have a root cellar and don't have a big enough freezer space and stuff. Like, my mom is just, she doesn't want to have anything to do with stuff that people are canning. She's like, ah, no, you could get sick from that.
I think some people, like, even for me, I grew up in the city, and canning was for the country folk. And yeah, it took me a while to adjust to it, but now I really love it. But I took classes for the rec department, and the lady who taught was the master canner for the county, and she was just like, you know, as long as you do it safe and you follow the directions and you use a proper recipe, a proven tested recipe, you're fine. So
yeah. I mean, we've been eating canned food that Mike's been canning for years. So wait, I wanted to ask you a quick question. What about the Garden Myth websites? Like, what's an example of a garden myth? Like, is it actually like gardenmyth.org or .com or something?
I don't know the actual terminology, but if you would go to your favorite search engine and type in garden myths, typically it'll come up in one of the top top searches. I think they're based out of Canada, but like, they will do a potato tower myth. You know, potatoes don't sprout tubers along the side of the stalk all the way up if you're doing it in a box. Holly, what are some other ones that that we've looked at?
I saw this potato box thing the other day that someone was like, will you build me this? And it had like a door where you could harvest the potatoes underneath. And I was like, this just doesn't look right. Like, how are you going to get the potatoes on the far side? All your dirt's going to come out. You're going to destroy it. Like, it just looked like a horrible idea. So, well, that's cool. I always like that gardening know-how. I feel like they're pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have to check out some garden myths. That's a good one.
Another one is like, like the Three Sisters garden method, where you plant the corn with mm-hmm. the beans. Obviously the beans are going to grow up the stalk of the corn. The squash is a good ground cover. Like, that's basic Three Sisters. But then there's also this supposed scientific side that the beans are adding nitrogen to the soil. And it's been scientifically proven that the nitrogen, so the theory is that the beans add the nitrogen to the soil to feed the corn. But there's no scientific proof that the nitrogen moves through the soil to the roots of the corn to feed the corn. So you can do the Three Sisters method from an aesthetic purpose. However, like, the science in the soil is not true.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Okay. So how about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine?
Well, if you're interested in finding a good book for year-round gardening, Nikki Jabour out of
Nova Scotia,
Canada, she's got a very good book. It's called The Year-Round Gardener, Year-Round Vegetable Gardener, and she goes all year long. And if she can grow stuff in Nova Scotia, Canada, many of us here in other parts of the world in the state should have minimal amount of problems. She does it outside. She does it in
cold frames,
yeah, the whole deal.
I love that book. It is like highlighted like crazy. Like, I go through that, but that's one of my favorite gardening books. Excellent resource.
And the website is gardenmygarden.com is the website that people can go to, and they've got just bukus of myths that has been debunked or proven to be, you know, all different types of topics when it comes to gardening.
Oh, wait, what was it? Garden what?
Gardenmyths.com.
Oh, it is. Okay. And that's not Nikki's.
No, that
not
that
to be
is,
confused there. Okay. Yeah, cool. Okay.
But yeah, Holly, the year-round vegetable gardener. Holly, you have a book, canning reference, something of that?
So one of my canning books that I have used and is well loved is called You Can Can, and it's put out by Better Homes and Gardens, and it's got really fun recipes. It's got
I think that's the one Mike has.
It's really fun. And if you've never had tomato basil jam, you need to make, if you like tomato-y, basil-y stuff, I recommend that. That's in there. And then there's another favorite in there that we like. I can't remember, though. I think it was it was a chili starter. So, mm-hmm. You take your, whatever your protein would be for your chili, and then you have the chili starter, and then voila, you have your chili. So, yeah. So there's a ton of other recipes in there, but, it's fun. And then that also gives really good canning directions, too, safety, what have you. And then there is a guide as well for X amount of tomatoes for whatever you're trying to do. So there's some fun stuff. And yeah, that would probably be my favorite canning book.
Awesome. Well, you guys have shared so much today. Is there anything you want to say before I get to my final question? Or
thank you for having us.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? What do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I think for me personally, just in larger cities, it is becoming more common to have farmers markets, things like that. But I think just the education of the importance of thinking about where your food comes from. And I know in the city of Milwaukee, there's many organizations like that where there's teens that volunteer to help set up markets and they get certain credit, things like that. There's a lot of stuff done on a high school level, but I think at an elementary school level and up from that, I think it's important. I think that children need to understand that your food on average travels 1500 miles from farm to plate if you go to the grocery store and purchase it. And I think that that will help having that knowledge, whether it be just knowing that or having some sort of knowledge of growing or what's in your soil, how there's a whole ecosystem in your backyard. I think that would definitely just help creating a greener world altogether.
And for me, last time I looked at it, and it's been a while, 1 out of 4 kids goes to bed hungry in the United States. One of the most fortunate countries in the world where food is very, very abundant, that should not be. And we need to work in a way in order to prevent not only kids going to bed hungry, but adults as well, whether it's a year like 2020 or a quote-unquote a normal year. People are always going to bed hungry, and that should not be that way in a country like the United States.
Oh, that's so true. One of the things I was going to say, Holly, I feel like I've had a lot of people talking about lately is how a lot of our produce is coming from overseas. It's not grown in our country. And people talk a lot about the subsidies to the farmers in the United States. But I also have been thinking lately, if our food is really coming from that far away, and they talk about the nutritional value of a tomato or whatever you're eating is decreasing because they're picking it off the vine. It's not ripening on the vine. It's probably also getting subsidized by tax breaks to the gas and oil companies that keep our price of gas so low that we can afford to import this food from other countries. Because I don't know, it seems like a lot of people have been mentioning that on my show lately. And I was just thinking the other day, well, maybe it's because gas, I mean, I'm probably the only person in America who thinks the price of gas is ridiculous, that I'm paying $2.25 to fill up my car in 2020. And I know, I appreciate it. I drive more than anybody. But at the same time, I just think if we had a tax, even 10 or 20 cents a gallon, so I was paying $2.40 a gallon, what could we do with that to help our environment? What could we do that to feed kids so we don't have kids going hungry? It just makes no sense to me. I remember in 2009, I had this job in Kalispell that summer, and it was 65 miles, and I was paying $4.75 a gallon for gas. I don't know why it was so high that summer, but to me, I'm just appalled at the cheap price of gas. And I know I'm alone in this thought and I'm totally off base. But anyway, I think what you guys said is so important. And you guys have been such eloquent and just knowledgeable, super guests today. And tell everybody, where do they find your radio show and your website with all these awesome videos and everything?
Our website is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. wisconsinvegetablegardener.com, the wisconsinvegetablegardener.com. It contains 1,800 garden videos, as well as all past radio shows, our shows heard in multiple cities across the country. If you're not in one of those cities, Boston, Kansas City, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, Delta, Utah, Salt Lake City, Banning, California,
Chippewa Falls,
Elgin,
Illinois,
southeast Michigan. You can certainly find all the replays on our website under the Season 4 tab, and you can catch up on previous seasons on the 1, 2, and 3 tabs at the top of the page. You can always email us at gardentalkradio@gmail.com with your garden questions, and our 800 number is always available. If you'd prefer to talk to us, you can leave us a message. We'll call you back at 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW. 24/7, 365, that number is available, and we will get you an answer to the problem that you have.
Joey, I just want to make sure. It's THEWISCONSIN, Vegetable Gardener. Like, THE is in the website, right?
Wisconsin. Yep. The Wisconsin. Okay. Vegetable Gardener.
Oh my gosh. Thank you guys so much for being such awesome guests and sharing so much knowledge with us, and have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you very much for having us on the program.
Thank you.
Okay. I have one more question.
Yes.
Are you guys rock star millennials born between 1980 and 1995?
We are. I guess we're technically zennials, but yeah, we were both born in 82. So whatever we are. Whatever you want to label it.
That's what my friend Dacia keeps saying. She's like, I'm a Zionial. She's 1979, but she said it's the 1978 to 83, which there's definitely a special group of people in those years. But I'm working on a book called Rockstar Millennial about the amazing guests, just like you guys, that I interview. And those are the dates that I have, 1980 to 95. So we'll see what the publisher says, but I have a publisher that is very interested, and I'm working on sending her the first chapter and the completed outline. My deadline to myself is to have it ready September 1st.
Now, on your first book, did you go through a publisher, or did you self-publish
it? No, I just self-published it. What happened was, I was building this class called freegardencourse.com, and then I was taking like this online class on how to build an online class. And like, she was like, all right, you know, start with your outline. And then as I filled in the outline, it eventually became the book. And then the book was called Free Garden Course, the Workbook. And everybody said, that's ridiculous. So I changed it to the Organic Oasis Guidebook, but it basically is just the text and it has like worksheets and stuff. And then I don't know. Okay. And I did not have a professional editor, and I have sold 6 copies, I think, in 2 years. So, we published it March 2nd, 2019. So I don't know. I'm working on that. Are you guys thinking about writing a book? Because I'm actually right now in ghostwriter school, learning how to write books for me and for other people, if you're interested. Just put that little idea in your head.
So we have contacted a publisher about writing a book, and that was probably like 4 years ago.
On the conservative
end. And probably like right before, yeah, I would say 4, because before I started working full time again. And my goal is to get a sample chapter done and sent into them. I have very good writing skills, so I got that going for me. And
It's the time thing,
right? Like, yeah. So hopefully we will get to that. And the thing is like, every time we used to do a ton of gardening talks at libraries and garden centers and garden expos, what have you. And people would be like, do you have a book? And
maybe,
like,
it was best that we didn't write one, because we'd have a whole box right. Full of these things. Yeah.
But at some point, I hope we can go back to giving gardening talks, and then we could have a book, and like, here's our book. And then, right. You know, they throw cash at us. So yeah.
Well, that's what I loved about this garden school thing. Ghostwriter school is that he has this like total proven framework and system where like you plan the book, prepare the book, and then you produce the book. So actually the writing of the book comes at the very end after you fill out this very detailed outline and like organize it. And then like, maybe like all of a sudden you're thinking about the answer to chapter 6 on how to like stake your tomatoes or whatever, then you can fill in that section, and you're not like starting out, oh, this is chapter 1. I don't know. We'll see. Like, I wrote to a publisher apparently April 19th, she wrote me back last year of 2019 or April something 2019 and said, oh, I like your idea, but you need all this information. And I was kind of like, I couldn't even really understand what she was asking for. And she gave me their submission guidelines. And like, so this guy that had the ghostwriter school, who's actually in my podcasting group too, so I've known him for a long time, he answered two of her questions just in his little free pre-ghostwriter school, like launch, whatever it was that he did last week. And then when I got into the school and started going through his documents, I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what she's asking for. And this is how I like come up with my argument. And this is where I do my research. And this is how I write. Like, he has these things for like when you have writer's block, which I write all the time, but I still get like, it seems like I hear all the words when I'm driving down the road or I'm out in the garden or running with the dogs. But then when I get home and get the computer out, I'm like, what did I want to say again? And right. I just feel like, so we'll see if I have like a thing to submit to the publisher September 1st, like I'm hoping, and I can take all these like and figure out. And the other thing he does is like, he helps people write blog posts and articles from, you know, like a podcast interview. Like I have all these interviews that like my show notes are 27 pages long. Like seriously, if you push print PDF, it's 17 to 27 pages long because I just transcribe it. And so I'm trying to figure out how to take all these interviews and turn them into blog posts that people would actually read, or how to turn them into like, I also want to do this thing called Golden Seeds Magazine, which would like, you know, be like organic gardening magazine that is no more, you know, and something like that. And, but I really struggle with like not writing every single word people say and not. So that's what I'm trying to do and make it all fit.
Interesting.
But I could send you a PDF of my Organic Oasis guidebook if you wanted to look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would send you a copy, but they cost me almost $20. They're like $17.85.
Yeah.
No, PDF.
For my copy. So, but I could send you a PDF of it if you wanted to look at it.
Be great.
Because the one key for me was that woman in the how to create your class was saying do the outline, because I was stuck. Like I wrote the first six chapters in 2 weeks over Christmas break of 2018. It just flowed. It was so easy, the first six chapters. But the next six chapters, and I wanted to be 12, you know, one for each month of the year. The next six chapters were just, I spent all summer like, and I could not get it together. And then all of a sudden in December, I saw the thing about the outline and I filled out the outline. And then December and January, I finished the book, and then I recorded all the videos to go with the class. And I was going to sell it like as a challenge. Like the challenge for $37 was you got a copy of the book, you got a journal, and you had to finish it in 6 weeks. And I sold four of those. And then this year I released it as the Organic Oasis Masterclass for $75 and sold one. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong. So, and I even added in a free, a monthly question and answer with like the soil expert. And I told her I'd pay her $50 a month to do it, and still only got one because I thought maybe that was it. They wanted like a community and a question and answer. So I don't know. Marketing is not my thing. I think sometimes I need copywriting skills, and I'm also not very good at promoting my own work, but I don't know. I put like every promo from December till July said, buy a copy of the Organic Oasis guidebook, get your copy. Nobody, I don't know. It's $26.95 listed on Amazon, but even when I've put it on sale for $22.95, nope. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. Anyway, you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
If you need anything, let me know if I can be of any help.
When this one will be published?
It will probably be, I don't, you guys shared so many golden seeds. I might push it up in the line, but right now where I'm at is like the end of September.
That's fine.
So we'll see what happens. Cause I've had quite a few like podcaster nutritionist people on, and I know my listeners are much more interested in what you said. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much they're interested in the nutrition piece.
It's hard to say.
So kind of break them up.
Right. Sometimes you're like this, we're not sure how this interview is going to go or how, you know, people receive it. And then it hits it out of the park. And then you're like, and then you think something's going to be like a really great interview. And then it's like womp womp. And it's like, is it timing? Is it who's around? Like, who knows?
A certain topic, it gets 450 downloads out of Memphis. And the next topic gets nothing out of Memphis. You know, it's just, there's no standard for me to figure out why New York had all these downloads today and Phoenix had these down low. Just, you know, no way.
Of me. Gosh, how do you even know that? I have no idea any of that information.
Our podcast, our platform is Podomatic, and we pay a yearly subscription in order to get all the statistics. So we can see what cities are downloading and how many are downloading and the whole deal.
Can I ask what you pay for that? I pay $77 a month for my website and stuff. Is it more than that?
What do we pay, Holly? The first, in order to get like 20 gigabytes of storage on it, I think we paid like
$300.
And then it's $100 a year until we run out of memory and we're only at 7 gigabytes out of 20. Because we only go through like three gigabytes a year on podcast, because we format it at 64K instead of 256K. So it's $100 a year now. And then that gives us all the statistics and the graphs and everything that we need that we put in our media kit for our sponsors. Because that's the first thing the sponsors
say. But is that different than your, like, where you upload your file? Is that your host? Like,
that's the host. Yes, that is the host website. Yeah. And then, for whatever, I mean, we're on Stitcher and we're on iTunes or whatever now that's called. And then I can search our podcasts and then I find that we're on FM Tuner. We're on iHeartRadio. I've never paid a dollar to iHeartRadio. Our show's there. We're on like 24 podcast platforms that we didn't know we even were on, but only the data comes through Podomatic whenever somebody downloads it through Podomatic. So we're not getting the stats from iTunes or Stitcher or iHeart or any of that. But yeah, it like Milwaukee's the hub. Now, you being in Montana. The closest hub would be Denver, I believe, unless for some reason there's a hub up there, because that would be your IRL or whatever that website your thing is. URL, it may create a hub in your area. But
or
yeah,
Spokane, maybe.
Spokane's a hub as well. But yeah, we've got every day I look at the stats and try to figure out what pattern there is, and there's not. We've got.
Hey everyone, have I told you about the Forager Project? They're a 100% organic plant-based food company based in California, dedicated to making a world a better place than they found it. Don't you love that? They make yogurts, kefirs, all these cool things out of organic cashews. Do you know that cashews are actually a seed on an apple? Yeah, I found the coolest video on cashews. Anyway, so they turn these cashews into sour cream, cottage cheese, milk, yogurts. They're really delicious. They sent me samples, actually, in a FedEx box with ice. It was so cool. They're absolutely delicious. Forager Project is passionate about creating healthy, organic, plant-based food and equally passionate about nurturing a healthy democracy. They believe that voting is the most essential ingredient needed to do this. Forager wants to inspire everyone to get out and vote, and that means you participate in our democracy. They provide voting resources and information for you at foragerproject.com/vote or on the socials like Instagram, Twitter, etc. at Forager Project. Cultivate democracy. Vote. Do you know someone who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast? If you like what you hear, we'd love it if you'd share the Organic Gardener podcast with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.